Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for staying with me today. We got some really important stuff lined up for you in the hour straight ahead. Joan Pride is here. She's with a Kiplinger editor, senior editor there at that fine institution, that fine family-owned small business that's about to celebrate their 86th anniversary. Joan joined right after they opened. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Hey, wait a minute. Wait just a minute.
Well, you did join right after they opened.
I joined after they opened, not right after.
You did join after they started the company.
Not right after. I heard the word right.
Oh, you heard that word?
Yeah, am I hallucinating?
Well, you know, right is a subjective term, John. It could be anything. It could be
anywhere. Yeah, well, you signed up as a subscriber right after they started.
Well, that is the truth.
Yeah.
But you know, I have been. I do remember the Kiplinger letter. I remember seeing it in the boxes of on the desks of my customers.
Oh yeah,
back in the 70s.
Yeah.
My first introduction to the Kiplinger letter was seeing it. A lot of times it would be in the they'd have it in the waiting room. You know, as I was waiting to see a decision maker on something or other.
Right.
They would be in the waiting room, and I remember seeing it way back in those days. So. But not an original subscriber, just close. Hey, Joan, one of the things that's in the news today is the president's speech last night.
Yeah.
And so I just want to let the audience know that later in the show, as we continue, we're going to talk a little bit about what Kiplinger has to say about health care, and we'll bring the president's speech into that when we do. But first up, Joan, the first order of business that Kiplinger reported on this week is something that you and I have been talking about and that I've been reminding people about it reluctantly. I didn't want to talk about it, but it's something we have to talk about, and that's another economic shoe that's waiting to drop on us.
Yep.
Tell the audience what that is.
Well, and that would be the commercial property market.
Yeah.
We say the outlook for commercial property is, and this is our word, woeful.
We're talking office buildings, we're talking shopping centers, probably hospitality industry, hotels, those kinds of things.
Right.
There's some condos out there. There's some condominiums that are part of commercial properties that may be tied into all that. I know there's some stuff out in Orange County, California, like that.
Right.
But there's a couple of problems that they've got in the marketplace, Joan. One is lower occupancy, and the other is a drop in the value of these properties.
That's right. And we say, again, sorry to be offering such bad news, but we say it's going to get worse before it gets better. And we say that's true for developers, owners, builders, lenders, and investors.
Yeah. Folks, this is when you hear me and some of my economists, brain trust members, saying that this recovery is going to be longer than we wish it were, that it could take a couple of 3 years to really get out of this. We're not trying to be negative. We're just trying to prepare you. This is going, the recovery, folks, the you know, I talked about resilience in the last hour, Joan, with one of our leadership experts, Jim Cantarucci, and he said one of the keys to leadership is resilience. And we're going to find out how resilient all of us are, I think, over the next couple of years. This is not a sprint that we're in, Joan. It's going to be a distance run, isn't it?
That's true. Yeah.
And so, what's happening with the commercial real estate is many of these properties, as you know, Joan, when most of us get a house, when we take a mortgage out on a house, we have the option, and if you're smart, you take the 30-year amortization.
Right.
That means that the total loan is never due all at once. You pay on it. You pay it off over 30 years.
Right.
But commercial real estate is almost never that way. It's almost always set up on a 20-year, maybe 20-year amortization, 15-year payment schedule.
Yeah.
But there's almost always a 3 or a 5 year balloon, meaning that the loan is due at that period.
Oh, I didn't know that.
At the end of that period. Yeah. And so what that means is that you've got to refinance. You've got to either renew that loan with the bank that you got it with, the institution you have it with, or you have to find a replacement. Somebody take
you
out.
But if it's a bad time for,
bingo.
It's economically a bad time for doing that when the loan comes due, what do you do?
Well, see, that's where we are right now.
Yeah.
That's the issue. That's
right.
The problem right now. Because, see, you guys report that the values are down as much as 40% in some places.
Yeah, that's right.
And so if you took out a loan on a piece of real estate, let's talk small time here. Let's say you took out a $5 million loan to develop a strip center in Flyover America, mm-hmm. and based on the value, say, 4 years ago, and today, if that property is worth, what would that be, $3 million, and you borrowed, $4 million, well, you're $1 million over the value of the property, let alone the discounted value to be able to qualify for a loan.
Right.
And so now, and then, let's say sometime in the next 6 months, that 5 year, 3 year balloon is gonna come around.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what do you do? What are you gonna do, Joan? I mean, and where do you go to have that refinanced? There's not
right.
there's not too many places
that's,
to take.
Yeah, that's the problem. We said well, it's
and,
much
and,
less credit
and
available.
And it's technically not even movable because you're upside down with the values.
Yeah.
So, and one of the things you guys point out, Joan, in the letter here that I think is very interesting, is unlike the housing bubble, or the mortgage bubble, I really should say, that didn't take out too many medium and small size banks. This commercial real estate situation could get more of the smaller banks.
Yes.
And that's troubling. That's very troubling to me because a lot of those banks, small business owners depend upon. Most of those banks.
Right.
Small business owners depend upon. And so, you need to look around, Joan. They need to look around and see, at your bank and see if your bank has made some of these commercial loans and kind of keep up with that a little bit. You can, these are pretty high profile loans a lot of times, so you should be able to find out what that is. I know it's bad news, folks. I don't like talking about it, but this is real. This is all part of what you need to put into your planning for the future and being prepared. 20 after, right back with Joan Pride. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with us.
You're reeling in the years, throwing away the time. Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine?
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Looking forward to having you come by and check out what we got there. We got whatever is on your mind under the small business sun. We've got something that will help you there from alpha to omega. And you can read, you can listen, you can ask questions, you can check out my blog, you can subscribe to my free newsletter. Whatever you got, we'll try to help you with it. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Jim Blasingame. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about what Kiplinger has to say this week about primarily at this moment about the commercial real estate. And Joan, one of the things you guys report on is that Uncle Sam wants to help, but there may not be much that Uncle Sam can do.
Right. Like we say, the Fed is willing to lend money, but it's only prepared to take top-rated debt as collateral. And the problem is that, banks need to get rid of the low-rated loans if they want to, get back on track.
Well, and top-rated collateral is code for not the stuff that people are underwater on, like they borrowed $4 million and it's only worth $3 million,
right.
and so if the property's now worth $3 million and you owe $2 million on it, you can probably move that loan.
Yeah,
but if it's worth $3 million and you owe $4 million, you got a problem, and the government's right. not going to be able to help with that.
Right, exactly.
And so what that's going to do, folks, is it's going to, and again, I do not like saying these things, but I have to report what's happening. The cascading effect, similar to what happened with the housing, I'm afraid there's going to be some cascading. It won't be as big as the housing issue, but the cascading effect will be that a property will go under, will default, I should say. The bank will have to absorb that, and that could put the bank at risk.
Right.
And then the good news, Joan, unlike the housing situation, these commercial properties are all known. Everybody knows where they are. They know what the values are. If there is any good news, it's that between the banks and the owners and the FDIC, which will be responsible for the bank ultimately, they should be able to come up with some kind of a timing for all these things, and so they shouldn't hit all at once. That's what I think that they should be looking for, and so that,
I see. Yeah,
that's the good news. The bad news, though, Joan, is if they stretch it out over a period of time, maybe a year or two.
Yeah,
that's just that much more of negative influence on the economy.
Right.
On the economy recovering.
Yeah.
And so, one of the things you guys point out is that Florida, Georgia, Arizona, Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana are some of the ones that are going to be the hardest hit, right?
Well, and you see so much in the news right now about Florida and California. That's mm-hmm. certainly true.
Yeah, exactly. Now, here's the good news, Joan. Could be good for small businesses, mm-hmm. and you guys point this out at the bottom of page one, and that is the opportunity
for
renters.
That's right. If you need to rent office space, this is the time to do it.
And just last hour, we had Roger Volcom, one of my negotiation experts, on the show.
Ah,
and we talked about this.
Perfect.
We talked about the fact that you need to be prepared to negotiate.
Right.
And because there are deals out there. Mm-hmm. So that's the good news. And I'll tell you something else, Joan. With all these commercial properties going under, somebody's going to find this. They're not going to just grow up in weeds. I mean, somebody's going to buy these right. at a really big discount of price.
Right.
So where there's pain, there's opportunity.
You bet.
So folks, check that out. Joan, let's move over and talk about the economy a little bit with regard to the job market. The unemployment rate is still rising, right? I mean, we're still laying off people. We're not hiring people back in a net situation.
Right.
So as that happens, the economy... We're talking about the economy. We're talking about being out of a recession,
right?
Right, technically, but it doesn't feel like that. And one of the reasons it doesn't feel like that is because we got almost 10%, and that's the official number, Joan. I think the real number is well over 10%.
Well, and the unemployment rate doesn't catch people, for example, who have given up, right? I mean, I think it catches people who are looking for work.
Right. Well, as an example, 20 years ago when I started my business. I didn't apply for unemployment. You know why? Because I was working for myself.
Right. And then the other thing...
But because I didn't have any customers in the early days, I was not on the unemployment rolls, but I was basically unemployed.
Right. Now, and I don't know how it counts people. Let's say that you're a part-time worker, but you really need to be full-time. You're underemployed, and I don't know that it counts people who
it
are underemployed.
It does not count those, Joe.
Yeah, yeah.
It does not count those. It only counts the people who show up and apply for jobs.
Right.
I mean, apply for unemployment and say they're looking for work.
Yeah.
And, or if you, what about people who've actually rotated off? In other words, they've run out of benefits.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it counts those people either.
Right, and there's got to be people like that in the mix.
So folks, you know, we've got to get to the point where 1 month we find out that we hired more people than we laid off.
Right.
That's the number, that's the magic month we're looking for, Joan.
Right.
And I don't know when that's going to happen. I don't know if that's even going to happen next year, 2010. So these are the kind of realities, folks, that we got to deal with. But we're making it through 2009 so far, and we just got to keep plugging along, stay resilient. We'll take a quick break. Right back with Joan Pride. I'm Jim Blassingame. We'll be right back.
We going out tonight.
inspire small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. And there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blassingay, the Small Business Advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Welcome back. It's 34 After. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. My pleasure to continue to be with you, visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, one of the things you reported on this week in the financial services section of the Kiplinger letter are some changes to the 401k plans. And you guys say that there's some new regulations coming and some target dates that we need to pay attention to. What's all up about that stuff?
Well, the regulations on target funds really were generated because, you know what a target date fund is. You know, you put your money in it and forget about it. And then,
well, is it a target date where...
Right, well, it rebalances. Let's say you think you're going to retire in 2030. Then you,
right.
Or around 2030, you put your money in a 2030 fund because it's going to be a lot more aggressive now and supposedly get less aggressive as you get to 2030.
Right, and
without
and,
you having
and,
to
but,
do anything.
But if you're, but there are different kinds. So if you're,
right, if you think you're going to
25 years old, they've got a target date for you. If you're
like
55 year old, they got one for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, if you were retiring, say in 2010, then you would get the 2010 fund.
Yeah. So and you can buy multiple. So that's what a target date fund is. All right, go ahead.
Right, but apparently in the last downturn, there were a lot of folks that had their money in 2010 funds that were heavily invested in stocks, so they lost an awful lot of money. Even though 2010 is next year,
well, why would 2010 be heavily in equity?
Well, that's what
why wouldn't they be heavy in cash?
That's what people were complaining about. So, what they're not, you know, there was some talk that there might be some regulation about what different funds can invest in, but instead, what they're going to do is make it more of a disclosure thing, like we're calling it truth in labeling, so that you understand that what a 2020 fund is, and also you need to understand that, you know. One company's 2020 fund might be a lot different than another company's 2020 fund. Just because they have the same date on them doesn't mean they're going to have exactly the same assets.
This surprises me, though, because I've looked at these, and I've never been confused at what the...
Yeah, but you're a smart guy.
Well, I don't know about that. But, I mean, I've never... Every time I've ever looked at one of these, the portfolio, or the prospectus, I mean... was very clear in what they were going to invest in. Now, if they didn't invest in what they said, that's another story. But, I mean, I don't understand why we need new regulations, because I always felt like these guys did a pretty good job of disclosing all that.
Okay. Well, I can only tell you what they're telling me.
Yeah, I understand. Well, what about the stricter curbs on investment advisors? What do you know about that?
Well, this is a little complex, but basically... the basic rule was, if you're providing investment advice, your compensation can't be based on how, you know, what decisions that the 401k account holder makes. So in other words, you know, if you advise them to pick X fund and they don't pick that, you know, that shouldn't affect your compensation. So in other words, that it shouldn't it should make you offer less conflicted advice. And there were, you know, and the question was, does this just apply to the person offering the advice? Does it apply to the whole company and all that?
Right.
And
right.
The rules got a lot looser under the Bush administration, and now they're expected to tighten them up again.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Another thing is, sticking with the 401k thing, you got some related advice for employers that sponsor 401k employees.
This is interesting, too, because, you know, the big thing right now that people are talking about is automatic enrollment. But a lot of businesses, especially small firms, are saying, you know, this really isn't the right time for automatic enrollment for a lot of reasons. One of which is, you know, once you have automatic enrollment, you're locked into certain things administratively and otherwise. But, you know, a company still may want to try to boost enrollment without instituting automatic enrollment, and the question is, how do you do that? Now, I kind of thought that this was a no-brainer, but apparently this is something that people have just figured out, that when you have a health insurance plan, you know, every year people have to re-up. They have to sign up again. And then at that point in the year, you know, usually around November or December, if you give them a reminder about the 401k, they have found that you get a lot, you get a very good response because people are being forced to focus on their benefits anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So if you give them the information about the 401k, get them to sign up, or if they're already signed up, encourage them to maybe increase the amount they put in the 401k. Apparently that gets a very good response.
Well, it makes sense to do it all at once. No, well, these healthcare contracts are annual contracts, Joan. I mean,
exactly. So, you have to do the healthcare thing anyway.
Yeah, so you have to do that anyway. So it's do it all at the same time. So that's good advice, Joan. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about how Ford's doing, that company that didn't take any of the government's money. And Joan's got a good report on for us on taxes. If there is such a thing as a good report on taxes. And then we got some other things. Oh, yeah, we're going to talk about healthcare too. Right after these messages, 20 till. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks for hanging out with me. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and they got an outstanding website, Kiplinger.com, that I encourage people to go to check out. And Joan, you guys also have, they can find your publications there, can't they?
You bet. All of them.
All of them, including the letter you and I work off of, the Kiplinger letter, which is about to become 86 years old.
That's right.
And still a family-owned, still a small business, basically, the Kiplinger folks. And then you got the three biweeklies, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the biofuels letter, those three.
Right. That's right.
And that magazine thing.
Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
How about that phone number?
Our phone number, our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
Can you do that in your sleep? Could you do the phone number?
Yeah, I probably already do.
Joan, and folks, check it out when you get a chance. Oh, by the way, Joan, I told you this earlier. I'm going to remind the audience. Folks, you know that Austin Kiplinger is the patriarch of the Kiplinger letter, the son of the founder, Willard. Austin is his son. Mr. Kiplinger is about to become 91 years old. And the weekend just before the Kiplinger letter celebrates his 86th birthday. And Joan, as of right now, on the 21st of September, a week from Monday, Mr. Kiplinger is going to be on the show again to celebrate his birthday and the anniversary.
Wow.
How about that?
That's pretty cool.
Well, he's been with me many times before, folks. Austin Kiplinger, I want you to go look him up on Google, Austin Kiplinger, and Kiplinger, and read his bio on the Wikipedia or whatever you can find there. Joan, I know you agree with me. I know you second my comment when I say that Austin Kiplinger is a national treasure.
Oh, yeah. No question about it.
Yeah, wonderful human being. And I'll tell you, very smart guy, great resume, and ramrod straight, you could dress him up and put him on a cover of GQ right now, couldn't you?
Absolutely. If they were
amazing.
Smart, they would do that.
That's exactly right. Joan, let's move over. A no-nonsense airline passenger bill of rights.
Yes.
Is that going to happen?
We say yes. We say pretty close to happening.
Is that going to be a good thing?
Well, we say business travel groups are fed up because we've got yet another round of horror stories of people, you know, forced to sit on airplanes for hours and hours and hours. Travelers are losing too much time.
There was something that happened recently where somebody had to sit on tarmac with all kinds of ghastly things going on inside for 6 hours.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to tell you something. If I had to sit there like that on a tarmac for 6 hours, I would probably consider rather being arrested than sitting there. And I would probably do something.
Yeah, because you're talking no water, no food, no bathroom,
and
no ventilation.
Not much air, and the toilets having a problem.
Yeah, screaming babies.
I would probably be saying, let's open the doors and get off.
Yeah.
I have to say that's I don't think I would sit there for 6 hours.
Well, and it was one of those situations where they sat there so long that when they finally got the go-ahead to leave, they couldn't because the pilot and co-pilot had they've gone over their limit.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they had to take them back. They had to take them back anyway and get a new pilot and co-pilot.
I don't understand why common sense can't prevail in these situations.
Right.
I mean,
right. Well, apparently it can't.
It's amazing, and I have to say, I'm giving whoever wants to hear giving them a little forewarning. If I'm on that plane, we got a problem. Joan, the Ford is hanging in there, right? They didn't take any money from the government. They're hanging in there. They're doing pretty good.
We say they're in our own inimitable way. It's on course to grab the brass ring in 2010. In other words, they'll probably be number one in U.S. auto sales. Next year.
Yeah, good for them. Good for Ford, because they didn't take the money from the government and then didn't go into bankruptcy. And I think consumers are rewarding them for that, don't you?
Well, maybe they just like their cars. I don't know.
Well, okay. I think there's probably a little of that other than there, though, too. I think there is.
Okay.
Joe, let's move down and talk about taxes. What's the news on the tax front?
Well, first of all, the IRS is really going after people with so-called Swiss bank accounts. And they're getting the names of people. You know, so the traditional Swiss bank account or offshore tax account, offshore bank account, usually is anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
So the authorities
been one of the you know, how many movies have we seen have this money wired to a Swiss bank account?
Right, exactly. But the IRS and the U.S. government have been trying to pierce the veil of secrecy, and they've made some headway. So you're going to see, and they've also got this amnesty program going on right now, where if you come in and admit you've got this account and you haven't been paying taxes on it, and you pay up your taxes and you pay a penalty, then you won't be prosecuted. But that runs out on September 23rd unless they extend it.
Wow.
So the question is,
that's going to be that they would have to do that, Joan, because all these people have been operating under. I mean, even though they shouldn't have avoided taxes, they've been operating under the ability through the illegal system in Switzerland. And so that amnesty thing is going to be important. It's going to be interesting to see the report on that. I'm looking forward to you guys providing us with that. What about tax hikes, Joan? We got that coming up?
Well, yeah, and this is kind of interesting, particularly if you're a small business owner. Because we think tax rates are going to be higher in the years ahead for individuals, if you're a business owner and you file Schedule C and you're, say, a sole proprietor or something like that, you might want to consider changing your business structure. Because if you file, say, as a corporation, then you're taking all that income off your individual return and putting it onto a corporate return.
But you're saying go to a C instead of an S.
Right.
But then you've got double taxation, don't you?
Well, we say
ultimately.
Well, we say still maybe a more attractive option despite the extra layer of tax.
But you also point out correctly that a limited liability company may be the best route to go.
That's true. Yeah.
And so this is where we may be about to come to a time, folks, where it'll be easier to decide whether to go subchapter S or an LLC. And so these are all things to keep in your mind and pay attention to what the tax policies are going to be. Quick break. Stay with me. I'll be right back. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. We're visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, I want to come back to this tax situation with corporations and individuals. I just want to land on that just a little bit longer. The point is, folks, is that with the potential for increased marginal tax rates on individuals and corporations, you need to do the math on that, and it may be to your advantage from a tax standpoint, if you're an S corporation, which an S corporation does not pay tax. It's not a tax. It's a tax filing industry.
It's a flow-through entity.
It's not a tax paying entity.
Right.
All the income flows through to the owners, the shareholders' personal taxes, tax returns, and as does an LLC. Whereas a C corporation is a tax paying entity.
Right.
And so what you're pointing out here, Joan, is that. With the combined rate increases, if this is going to be a prolonged situation, and if you have, you know, your company, you probably need to be making over a quarter million a year in net profit, right?
Yes.
That's one of the things. So if you're at that level, you might be better off with a C corp rather than an S. But again, I just want to say this one more time: you might want to look into an LLC. You know, Joan, for a long time, it wasn't clear of what was the advantage, how much of an advantage an S-corp had over an LLC, and, and people would just do one or the other, maybe not really thinking about why they were doing it.
Right.
But with this tax increase, if marginal rate increases, that might change things on that front.
Yeah, it might. That's what we're thinking.
So, folks, make sure that you get some counsel on this. Okay. With your tax expert and your legal expert.
Right.
Joan, the president gave a pretty good speech last night and laid out some things. Don't know how many people he changed, but Kiplinger reports on that on the debate this month, this week. Tell us about it.
Well, we obviously couldn't report on the president's speech, but we talk about how there was kind of a we'd called raucous debate in general across the country about health care reform during August while Congress was out of town. And we say that even though there was a debate and there are disagreements on some major points, that there is consensus on certain key aspects of the whole issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's one fact, basically, Joan, that we need to point out, and that's that if the Democrats want to do this, if they want to do whatever they want to do, they can pretty much do it.
Yes, that's
they've
true.
They've got the numbers. Now, in the Senate, they're a little bit weak in the Senate.
Right.
And they're putting a lot of sunlight on Olympia Snow from Maine, a Republican, a rhino, basically. She's basically a Republican in name only for some of the votes that she casts. But Olympia Snow may be the swing vote for the Democrats. If they can get her to come over, there are a couple of things that she wants, then they can basically do whatever they want. But they really need this to be a bipartisan legislation, don't they, Joan?
Well, they certainly want it to be. I mean, they could ram things through, on certain procedures, just with Democratic votes. But they would really rather there be some Republicans on board.
Right. And I'm not sure what he did last night is going to change all that much. What he said last night is going to change things all that much. Joan, for me, from my standpoint, I liked some of the things that he said last night. I thought some of the things he mentioned is moving in the right direction. But Joan, I just don't believe that the government can look at a situation like health care and have a proposal that will solve the problem. I just don't believe government can pull that off. I just think government should get out of the way more and allow the marketplace to work. And like allowing small business owners to buy across state lines, mm-hmm. and through associations and that sort of thing. And I mean, that's my fundamental position, is just that I don't trust the government to solve this problem. I don't think they can do it. And so anyway, that's my position. And we'll see how it goes. But I suspect, Joan, and I'm not happy about this, but I suspect that there will be legislation this year, probably very much along the lines of what the president said last night.
Yeah, and that's what we've been saying all along. And that's not saying we advocate that. We're just saying that because we've had people write to us and say, why are you advocating this? We're saying, we're not advocating it. We're just saying this is what we think is going to happen.
Right.
Because we think the president has too much to lose politically, that he'll find some way to agree on something, even if it's a lot smaller than what he had proposed originally.
But it will still be the camel's nose under the tent, because we all know, because he has said this, he thinks the government should be paying the single payer for health care. He believes that's the best way, and that's the direction I think he's headed in. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, she'll be back. I will be too, but it'll be tomorrow. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you that when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.